certainly glad to be here this morning. I know that we're few in number, as Brother Randy said, but we know the Lord's promised to be with us. And Brother Randy, I certainly enjoyed that this morning. And, you know, we've all thought about what we're leaving behind and looking forward to where we get to go, you know. But how many times I've thought about that, you know, and the legacy that you leave behind and everything. I really did. I enjoyed that this morning. Yes, we did get little Scotty into the world here. The Lord brought her into the world on Friday at 1 o'clock. And got the phone call. We dropped everything and took off. And she's certainly a beautiful little girl. Just ask that you'd continue to remember her and Kelly and Ethan. He's walking on cloud nine. And Kelly's still healing up, and we got to see little Scotty. Hopefully we'll get to go down and see her again today. So ask that you remember them. And there are many that Jessica and her family's traveling. They're going to the beach, so ask for safe traveling graces. And I know Randy has mentioned Nancy, and we know that Jamie was her mom and everything. And so, you know, we've got a lot to pray for and remember each other. You know, it's good. You know, our church family, we remember each of us and things that we go through and in our daily lives. So just remember each other. Now, I'm not sure how long or how far along we're going to get through today, what some of the things that my thoughts were, but maybe even we could do a little bit of study on it. But some thoughts have been going through my mind about King David. And I believe even Brother Randy might have used this in one of his lessons. Samuel tells Saul that he did wrong when he made that burnt offering. And that was to be the duty of Samuel. If you have your Bibles with you, if you would, turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 18. I'm sorry, 1 Samuel chapter 13. Samuel chapter 13, beginning here in verse 8. Now this speaking about Saul here, it says, "And he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, Bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, What hast thou done? And Saul said, Because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore said I, The Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal. I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself therefore and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee." You know, Saul, here we see, is being rejected as the king of Israel. And now when you look at verse 14, this is speaking about David. It says that David, whom the Lord had sought, says that he sought a man after his own heart. And the Lord commanded him to be captain over his people. You know, I'm not going to turn over and I'm not going to read, but also in Acts chapter 13 and verse 22, it says there again that David, the son of Jesse, a man after mine own heart. And I know that we have heard that statement so many times before. But have we really sat down and pondered what it means? What does it mean to be a man after God's own heart? You know, Saul, he was the first God king of Israel. He looked the part. He acted the part. He was known for his courage. He was known for his generosity. He was tall. He was good looking. It says that in the Bible, when you looked at him, that he stood out head and shoulders above the others around him. And at first, when you begin to read the scripture, here's about Saul. Saul seemed to be doing pretty well. But it's like Brother Randy mentioned about Hezekiah. It didn't take long for Saul's pride to grow and his reliance on God to fade away. This is what we see before Saul and his army. They came under attack. And Saul tried to take matters into his own hands. He wanted to make this burnt offering. There were some problems with this about Saul doing what he did. First of all, in our reading here, we see that he had received express command to wait 7 days. Now, I don't know how long that on the seventh day, Saul was starting to get pretty antsy here. But it says here that he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. Well, Samuel hadn't showed up right at the time, I guess, that they had appointed. Saul understood the stake of his kingdom be on him waiting. But he just couldn't stand it. He couldn't wait. He chose to be impatient, and really, what he was doing, he wasn't trusting in God. He probably didn't do this meaningly to go against God, seeing that God had shown him so much favor. But I believe at this time Saul was under a lot of pressure. To him, at this time, if he would continue to wait, it was hard and it was uncertain that at any moment, with the enemy encompassing around about him, he didn't have a safe place to retreat to the mountains. And he knew this. So the best thing to do in his mind was to take matter into his own hands. He goes and makes this burnt offering. When he's called out for his disobedience, when Samuel does come up, he calls him out for what he did. And instead of taking responsibilities for his action, what does he do? He makes excuses. He makes the excuses, well, I didn't want to wait because of the people around us. I didn't know what was going to happen. What we see here is the beginning of the fall of King Saul. You know, I think about Adam did the very same thing. Adam did not want to take responsibility for his actions. Adam even went so far as to try to blame God for his disobedience. When he ate of the fruit, it tells us over in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 12, this is what he said, "And the man said, the woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat it." He's saying, God, it's your fault. Did you ever know someone that didn't want to take responsibility for something that they did wrong? I certainly do. But you know what? I've been in that boat myself. There's some times where I don't want to own up and take that responsibility. You try to think of a way to get out of a situation. Instead of just confessing and say, I did it. Because of Saul's disobedience, excuse me, because of his arrogance, because of his lack of faith, and because of his refusal to trust in God, he was rejected by God as king, and David was chosen. Now, how was David different? At this time, he was only a young lad. He hadn't accomplished anything that was king-worthy. Especially when we're looking at this time when Samuel makes this prophecy about David. He says he was a man after God's own heart. But God knew David's heart. And what David would do long before David had any idea what his future was to hold. You know, if you look, it doesn't say this per se, but 1 John chapter 3 and verse 18. It says, my little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. You know what that says? Your actions speak louder than your words. It is by looking at the way that David lived his life that we can see what his heart was. Now, I've written down a few things. These aren't totally everything that we can see about David's heart, but there are about seven things that I looked at, and I may not get through all of them. If I don't, that's okay. I don't know how long it's going to take Mike to recover. Maybe we could do some other things with this, but there were some seven things that I wrote down that we can identify the heart of David. One, we can look at David's faith. 2, we're going to look at David's trust. 3, we're going to look at David's love. Then we're going to look at David's humility and his integrity. David asked for forgiveness. And in all those things that went on through David's life, he continued to worship God. So number one, let's think about David's faith. Keeping in mind what David's heart was like. You know, if you talk to any young child that has ever gone to Sunday school, ever gone to vacation Bible school, almost all of them can tell you of the account of David and Goliath. One of the very first things you ever learned about when you were a small child. And you know, I think it's funny, you know, like if you watch sporting events on TV, these fellows may not realize what they're saying, but if you got this small team that's playing against a bigger team, and you know what? They always use the analogy of David versus a Goliath. They may not even go to church. They may not believe anything, but they'll say that. And that's proof that it happened. This was David's first accomplishment in our eyes, and it took great courage to face a man of Goliath's stature, this big, seasoned, sword-wielding warrior. And all David had was a sling and some rocks. David was a man of faith. Before David swung that stone at Goliath, I want you to look at what it says in 1 Samuel here, chapter 17. Before David even slung that rock, he says here in verse 45, "Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." That's David's faith. David gave God It was through David's faith that God had empowered him to be successful. David had a giant killing faith. This type of faith remained throughout his whole life. You know, there are examples of great faith of men of God in the Bible, all over through the Bible. I think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael. That's the better ones for them. How that the faith that they had when they were confronted with being cast into that fiery furnace. if they didn't fall down and worship when they heard those instruments playing, this image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up, then they were going to be thrown into that fiery furnace. And you know, we read it many times about the answer that they gave the king, Nebuchadnezzar, in Daniel chapter 3, verse 17 and 18. Says, if it be so, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Either way, it was a win-win situation. You know, men should be able to look at us, they should, and see that we have great faith in God. I just like Brother Randy mentioned, you know, there's times that can make our faith waver. You think about maybe having a loss of a job, a loss of a loved one. Things can make us really get down and let us get down in the valley. I remember the time when I lost my dad. Man. I remember the time when we lost little Alicio. Man, you get down in the valley. But remember, when you're in that valley, you're down in the bottom of that valley. There's only one way to look. Look up. Turn your eyes to God. Faith in Him. And He'll see you all the way through that valley. So David was a man of great faith. David was also a man of great trust. Even though Saul was a constant threat to David's life, David had respect for him as king. And David spared Saul's life more than one occasion. When David had the opportunity to kill Saul in a cave, he chose not to do it. Now, there was a reason why he chose not to do it, but the account that we have is in 1 Samuel chapter 24. Beginning here in verse 1, it says, and came to pass, when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel, and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheepcotes by the way, where was a cave, and Saul went in to cover his feet. And David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. Do you think that was any coincidence that they went into the same cave? That's not a coincidence. And the men of David said unto him, behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemies into thine hands, that thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words, and suffered them not to arise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, "My Lord the king." And when Saul looked behind, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. And David said to Saul, "Wherefore hearest thou men's words, saying, Behold, David seeketh thy hurt? Behold, this day thine eyes have seen how that the Lord had delivered thee today into mine hand in the cave. And some bade me kill thee, but mine eyes spared thee. And I said, I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand. Friend, that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not, know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it. The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. As he saith the proverb of the ancients, wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, but mine hand shall not be upon thee." David showed complete trust in God at this time. And what that means is it was not in his hands to strike down the king that God had put in command. David knew that God had proclaimed him to be the next king. But unlike what Saul did with the burnt offering, David chose to wait until that was God's appointed time. Until God would remove Saul, rather than David taking matters into his own hands. David was also trusting in God, even relying on him to save him from the wickedness of Saul, who sought to kill David throughout the rest of his life. So we've looked at David's faith, we looked at David's trust. Now, let's think about David's love. In all his dealings with Saul, we hear the term agape love. David showed this type of love, agape love, toward the man who was determined to be his enemy. Now, what's interesting is about David at this time here that we're looking at, where David spared his life here in 1 Samuel. David here he's chosen by God. He's described after a man after his own heart. At this very time, this happened centuries before Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. You know what it says over there in John chapter 5 and verse 44? Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. "But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you." You know, that's the ultimate type of love that there is. I think about myself in particular. You know, if someone does something bad to you, what's the first thought that comes to your mind? I'm going to get you back. That's the very first thing that comes to your mind. If anyone could have had a thought like that, it would have been David. In the book of Romans, chapter 12. Verse 17 says, recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, venge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thy enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Verse 17 says not to be overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. You know, you think about, you ever watch these football games sometimes, and all of a sudden you see a lineman get a flag, and you think, what in the world was that over? Then they go back and they show you the replay, and you see somebody on the other team give him a shove or grab him on the face mask or give him a hit. That guy never gets the flag. It's the guy that retaliates. He always gets the flag. That's what we have when we have this feeling of retaliation. I'm going to get you back. If we harbor that type of feeling, then it gives place to vengeance. And that's evil. We know that we're commanded to love thy neighbor. You know, by David's very actions. And it said over there about heaping coals of fire on your enemy's head. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verses 8 and 9. This is what David did. And Saul was very wrong, and the stain displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward. David had killed many in battle. Saul didn't like it when they said, hey, David's killed 10,000, Saul's killed thousands. He didn't like that. Jesus is teaching to love thy neighbor here in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 44. Gives us the real meaning of the law by loving our enemies as well. You remember how that Pharisee came up? They always tried to trick Christ. The Pharisee came up to Jesus and asked him in Luke chapter 10 and verse 29, he said, about loving the neighbor. He said, well, who's my neighbor? That's when Jesus told him the parable of the Good Samaritan. There was a man that was on the highway. And it says that this man was beat, he was stripped, he was robbed by thieves. Then it says that a priest came by after that, and he didn't help him. Then it says that a Levite came by. The Levite looks up and sees him, and he goes over to the other side of the street to stay away from the fellow. But then this Samaritan came by. Says that he looked on the man and he had compassion on him. He helped the man as much as he could. Says that he bound up his wounds, put him on his beast. I'm not sure what the beast was. Either it was a horse or a donkey or maybe cow, camel, I don't know what it was. It was a beast. And he took him over, and he took him to the inn. He got him a room to stay there. The Samaritan gets up the next morning, and he says, I've got to go. Continues on to his journey, but he goes to the innkeeper, and he gives him some money to help take care of this man that he had helped on the wayside. But he also tells the innkeeper, he says, look, I'm going to come back by. He said, whatever it costs above of what I've given you, I'll settle up with you when I get back. But he said, I want you to take care of that fellow right there. Then the Christ looked at the Pharisee and asked him, he said, which one was the neighbor to this man? Now seemingly you would have thought that a priest that came by, then a Levite that came by, which is a priestly part of Israel, but it wasn't. That's the type of love that David had shown throughout his life. So we've talked about three examples here so far. David's faith, David's trust, David's love that he had. Now I'm going to stop there this morning. Again, I've got some other ones here that I do want to go on through, but I'm for time's sake, I think if I get too far, then we won't be able to stop on time. So I'd rather stop too early than too late. But I ask that you'd remember me. Maybe if you get a chance, we'll finish up, you know, this lesson here. But again, pray for Mike on his way back. I know he's going to get back. I just don't know how strong he's going to be when he gets back, you know, or what he'll be able to do. So maybe we'll continue on with a few more of the services by helping him out until he gets, you know, back on his feet. So I appreciate the time. I appreciate the attention that everybody's given us. But Brother Randy, let's have a song.